Exton Moss Experiment. Adventures in Wine and Space with Simon Exton and Ken Moss.
Hello everyone, and a very warm welcome to another edition of the Exton Moss Experiment. I'm Ken Moss.
I'm Simon Exton.
Tonight, continuing our sort of Russian Cold War theme, we are going to be doing a Doctor Who commentary on the 1984 Peter Davison story, Warriors of the Deep.
For hundreds of years, our sea devil brothers have lain entombed, waiting patiently for this day.
This is Sentinel 6. You are formally identified as a hostile intruder. Transmit your security clearance codes. This is your final warning.
Whoever's in that area, find them.
Revive the warriors.
When I say run, run.
I still need them.
Run!
Take up defensive positions.
If it's any consolation, I may just know how to stop it.
When I want your help, I'll ask for it.
I've got nothing to lose.
I should have you shot.
Twice we offer the hand of friendship to these descended primitives. And twice we were treacherously attacked, our people slaughtered.
If they intend to fire those missiles, they have the means, I assure you.
It's not regarded as a classic. I remember this on transmission. What about you?
Yeah, I remember it on transmission. I quite enjoyed it.
Before we get into the mechanics of things, we need a little drinky. It's time to get the lid off the gin. I'm going to point the tonic screwdriver and open us up. And it's time for another of the batch innovations. And it's a crossbreed. It's Batch Innovations and Defiance Distillery in Greater Manchester. It's their Heritage Garden Gin. It's 40%. And the info bollocks says, Batch X Defiance is a collaboration between two award-winning Northwest distilleries. A fresh aroma with savoury notes on the palate are balanced with herbaceous rosemary, thyme and carrot. This gin is packed full of botanicals you would find in an English heritage garden. I don't think we've had a gin with carrot in it before.
I can't remember one.
Oh, Batch, every time you just surprise us with something new. Well, as ever, Ryan, the head distiller, has suggested that we try a little sniffet neat. So, what are we... Ooh, I can smell the rosemary, I can smell the thyme. I'd be lying if I said I could smell the carrot, but they're not exactly the most pungent aroma.
I'm not getting a wild lot of rosemary, to be honest. I can definitely smell the thyme. But...
Oh, well, let's have a little sip.
Well, it's very nice. Very herbal.
Very herbal. A tincture, one might say. Now, with Indian tonic and ice, what's the nasal appraisal like this time?
Still not very much.
No,
a little
not really.
Bit, again, a little bit of thyme, but...
Let's dive in. Oh, now I'm getting the carrot. Well,
mm. Yes, and I mean, you definitely taste the rosemary, taste the thyme, and taste the carrot. This is rather nice.
That's very Moorish. Mm. It's very smooth.
It's very smooth. It's got a little bit of a bitter edge.
But it doesn't linger.
No, that's a very nice gin.
Oh, I think I could get comfy on that. What would you give it?
I'm just thinking, because it's very smooth. It's very well made. It does do what it says on the tin. The only problem is that slightly bittery edge to it. I'm not wild keen on.
I do see what you mean. And the more mouthfuls you have, the bitterness is, it's there in the background.
I think it's a 4 from me.
Yeah, it's a 4 from me, a good solid 4. But as ever, I just can't give Batch enough kudos for what they do. They're very different. Now, we've had different gins before from other distilleries, and they've been a car crash. And no matter what we've had, it's never been diabolical. There have been some that we enjoy more than others, but carrot in a gin. I suppose it's logical. Any vegetable matter can be distilled, but I just wouldn't have thought of it as a primary flavour. That's not bad at all.
Yeah, very nice.
Nice little surprise through the door. Thanks, Batch, and thanks, Defiance. So, gin in hand, let's go into the undergallery here at Podcasting House and open up one of the doors. Dr. Exton, which one are you fancying?
Well, I'm going to go into the Black Archive.
What are you rescuing this time?
What I'm going to rescue is a piece of 1960s sci-fi television called Plateau of Fear.
Tell me more.
There were a number of series in the 60s that were linked largely around the two central actors, Gerald Flood and Stuart Guidotti. And they played leading man and assistant in two groups of serials. The first being the Pathfinders in Space serials. And then they went on to the City Under the Sea. Now, there were three serials in the City Under the Sea series. The second and third, which is City Beneath the Sea and Secret Beneath the Sea, survive in their entirety. But the first one, called Plateau of Fear, doesn't. So I'd quite like Plateau of Fear back, please, in keeping with the underwater theme.
Splendid. Well, I'm going to take us next door into the gift shop.
Sunshine, lollipops and rainbows, everything that's wonderful is what I feel when we're together.
This is sort of underwatery, but a bit of a crowbar. I would like to see a full set of CD releases of the Radio 4 James Bond adaptations. These star Toby Stevens as the title character. They were produced by Martin Jarvis and Rosalind Ayres, and they've been running about one a year now for quite a long time. It's a good 10 years at least. And they're of a really high standard. They are adapting the books quite closely. There were only 12 original novels, and one of those was effectively a short story collection. But they're extremely well done. They've got some brilliant guest casts in them, and they've never had a commercial release, and they're not available, which is a crying shame. But they've certainly done Thunderball, and that's a watery one, so we'll have that. I know you're not a huge James Bond fan, but they are really good pieces of drama.
Well, no, I like James Bond. I like the original books. I'm not a massive, massive fan of a lot of the films. I think the early stuff was great, kind of lost its way partway through and really picked up again with Daniel Craig. And yeah, I rather like James Bond, but I didn't like it when it got too jokey.
No, some of the Roger Moore stuff was, well, the films were so far removed from the source material that they were basically a title with something else hung on it. But yeah, these are adaptations of the original novels.
Having said that, for all I've said, I don't like jokey James Bond. I love the 1960s Casino Royale.
Oh, with David Niven.
Yeah, because it isn't a James Bond film.
No, it isn't, no.
It's a comedy that happens to have quite a number of characters that go by the name of James Bond.
Oh, I've not seen that for a long time. Probably worth revisiting that. Spaff, are you down here? We're watching Warriors of the Deep. Oh, here he comes.
Hello, these people.
What have you been doing? You coming with us?
Yes.
So here we are, back in the viewing room. As always with Doctor Who's, we're going to watch the first and last episodes and give you a little bit of an overview of the middle bits. Without further ado, going all the way back to 1984, it's Ron VT, Episode 1 of Warriors of the Deep.
It is very nostalgic, this title sequence.
This is the first one that I remember, and there's a lovely little making of on, I can't remember now. I think it might be the Leisure Hive DVD, where Sid Sutton's interviewed and he describes in great detail how he made it, and it sounds utterly tortuous, focusing and refocusing for every frame and everything that had to be exposed again and again and again. It must have taken days to make that. So here we are on Seabase, whatever it is. It's hideously overlit. Everything's white, the light's just bouncing off everything.
And you can see why they did it this way, because it does look very military and functional. Again, it's a bit like Robots of Death. If they're military and functional, why have they got all that slap around their eyes?
True. But wouldn't that sea base have been much better if it was a bit more submarine-like?
No, I like the contrast between the interior of the Silurian ship and the sea base. I know a lot of people say it's massively overlit. I don't actually have a problem with it, because it gives you a real contrast between here and the sea base. And we're looking at the Silurian ship at the moment.
Oh, I really hate these redesigned Silurians. The original Silurians from 1970, brilliant. They're still the best design as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, I don't see this as being such a massive change. That's possibly comparing them to what came later. I quite like the later redesign, to be perfectly honest.
It's very well done. I think they're a little bit too human in Modern Who. I would have preferred them to go for a... Well, with what they did with Madame Vastra, that was always... She evolved into a very good character. And within the context of the series, it's been explained away why the different colonies have looked different. They're all different strains of Homo reptilia. But there's been some cracking sort of fan art over the years. Adaptations of the original Silurians. And they're horrific. And you think... I'm not actually sure you could put that on screen, but what a brilliant adaptation of that design. Now, the Sea Devils, spoiler alert, they crop up later in this episode. It's quite a nice evolution of the design, because they're pretty faithful to the original. They've made them a little bit more samurai warrior and given them a direct link to the Silurians. It neatens up a bit of continuity, I suppose. That I didn't mind.
This set gives a nice feeling of space, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. There are some great bits in this, which I remember from Transmission. I'll come back to this later on. But it is a very expansive set. It's not a tiny little Limegrove Studio B.
And I do agree to capture a sort of underwater feeling. They could have been a little bit more claustrophobic.
Ooh, little set wobble there. He's just nudged one of those little pillars. Surely that glowing red thing there is the end of one of the cyber guns. Oh, and another set wobble. The end of one of the cyber guns from Earthshock.
I don't think this is a terrible redesign. Second companion was going to be called Tampon.
Oh, hideous human eyes behind the mask there. Oh.
It's about the only time that you see it, I think.
Yeah, it is. It's true. In fairness, it is a good set. Multi-level as well, which does... I think that helps with the feel of Expanse.
Yeah. There's actually kind of a feel of the Space 1999 command set on this, isn't there? Because of the amount of space and multi-level.
Oh, I'll give you that, actually, yeah.
And brightly lit.
Yes. Yes, there's no sun, there's no moon. And it's, as other podcasters may comment, lit up like a fucking hospital.
Listen to me. Yeah, because it's military and functional. The current Michael's replacement arrives
the day after tomorrow. There is an effort within this, and I've only just realised, to give it a bit of a multicultural feel. You've got her that's calming Maddox.
Israeli.
Yeah, and then you've got Ingrid Pitt's character, who God only knows where she's supposed to be from. Ingrid Pitt, this is only... What, 11 years after Time Monster? She's not appeared on screen yet, but she's certainly not Galea.
Oh, look, an X-Wing fighter.
I do like the fact that Turlough and the Doctor have got this... They've clearly been working on the console together, doing bits and pieces of technical stuff in between this series and the last series. Because all the way through Series 21, there was this... Turlough tinkering with bits of the console, and he understands how everything works now, and we've never really had that before, apart from Romana to an extent.
There was stuff that Susan knew.
Yeah, but it was never really She never rolled up her sleeves. Well, she was never allowed to. She never rolled up her sleeves and got stuck in when there was a fault. I'm a
doctor. Murder. I mean, an awful lot of what ages Ingrid Pitt there is
hair.
I was thinking more the vast amounts of makeup.
Yeah, and a fairly unflattering costume. The buttons on the console. The buttons on the console, those coloured ones. I don't imagine that you know what they are. There used to be a thing when I was little called Unibricks. And they were little cubes that used to click together. Thinking back, I'm not actually sure what the point of them was. I think there was some sort of counting aid. We certainly had them at school. And that's what they looked like. Now that's a nice shot, where the Sentinel attacks the TARDIS and the camera just, it pans in a certain way. Because technically that would have been quite a precise shot to pull off in 1984.
Can't be so. A creature strong enough to destroy the probe doesn't exist.
She's not great, whoever that is.
None of them are outstanding in this. It's certainly no Robots of Death, is it? Computer started counter. You see, I can't look at him. I can't remember his damn name. The base commander, without thinking about the bloody DFS sale. He was the face of DFS for quite a long while.
Why have the guards got helmet gas masks things on? Arming of the proton
missiles is in progress. I'm not quite sure. Medics, I said take up your
position. The function of the base depends on you. All of this bit is very level 7, isn't it?
Oh, yes. I mean, the whole thing, for those of you that aren't familiar, the whole thing about Warriors of the Deep, it was Cold War-esque. It's set 100 years in the future at that time. And it refers to the enemy. It's never named, but it's clearly implied to be Russia. I don't
believe it. Yeah, and they talk about Eastern Bloc, or the Eastern Group and the Western Group.
Mm.
I mean, do they ever actually say whether this is Eastern or Western?
I don't think so. Missiles are locked onto targets. Just looking at it now, it's quite unpleasant there, this sync operator. He's got a bloody big hole in his head that the computer literally plugs into. It's quite unpleasant, really. And one other thing I've never really looked at and thought about this. The direction's quite nice. There are a lot of camera... It's not a flat story in any way. There are a lot of very nice camera angles. Some are looking up, some are looking down. There are a lot of pans and tracking shots. 30 seconds to launch. It's a bit more animated than a lot of Doctor Who.
Yeah, and the multi-level works really nicely. And
yeah, it does.
The
we can breathe
again. Spiral staircase. And I sound the all clear, but the base is to remain on full. The performances are really quite flat, aren't they?
Yeah, they're awful. Oh, no, you see, that's nice. Look at how subdued the lighting is in that corridor there.
Yeah. Yes, of course. A sea base. Rather special kind. Here we go, Chekhov's chemical. Sort of missiles that kill life, but leave everything else intact. Oh, no, that's quite nice. Although, looking at it, it's blindingly obvious the way the door should be.
Yeah.
So the Doctor and Turlough trying to push it against the door jamb and Tegan just coming along and pulling it in the direction it was supposed to go. It was nicely done, but... Have we any indications of the conditions within? No. The voices aren't quite as good as the original, are they?
They're nowhere near. That was one thing I was just thinking then. The very monster of the week. The original Silurians were far more in control. You're in command. I'll be in the psychosurgical unit,
sir. What year are we in?
Around 2084.
Little seems to have changed since my time.
Absolutely nothing, Tegan. There are still two power blocks, fingers poised to annihilate each other.
He's suffering from severe stress.
Yeah,
it's
so
our considered opinion he's
unfit. Why have they got that heavy eye makeup on in a military base?
I'm not sure. Mind you, who knows what fashions are going to be in another 60 years.
Well, that way we could probe deeper into Maddox's mind.
but I can't.
Although, are these not the suits from Living Skins repurposed? They look damn familiar.
Bit more bulky.
Maddox will have a total mental collapse unless treated.
All right.
Yeah.
She looks smug as fuck there, doesn't she? It's you, bloke, have failed to do this.
Don't let this disc out of your sight.
He's a bit Alexander Armstrong.
If it gets into enemy hands.
Ooh, a CD.
I will return it to you immediately we're finished with it.
She looks as though she could do with a good few nights' sleep, doesn't she?
Yes. Now, still using 3.5mm phono jacks, nice to see. Some of the sets and the corridor sets here are actually quite reminiscent of Fort of Doomsday, which is about the best thing in that story, but there's some cracking model work and corridor sets in that.
The information on that disc is fed straight into the deepest control centres of his brain. Maddox has no other choice but to obey.
She's very arch. Yeah, the guest cast aren't brilliant in this. It's difficult to feel sympathy for any of them.
But a lot of that has to do with the direction, doesn't it? Because, you know, Ingrid Pitt put in a very animated performance and a good performance as Galea, but she's quite hammy in this. And there may be some really nice visuals in the direction, but I'm not sure he's getting the best out of his cast.
You and Preston get the combat teams moving. Whoever's in that area.
Base commander's not bad, though. Preston. He's all right.
How do you feel, Maddox?
Fine, controller.
Smug turn to camera.
The actor playing one of the Silurians turned up last year in Village of the Angels.
Really? Manny, it's difficult to get enthused about that.
Playing the character of Gerald, I've blocked Flux out of my head as much as I possibly can, so I can't remember who that is. We are ready
to enter. At the time of recording, the next episode to be aired is Legend of the Sea Devils. It's a complete coincidence, by the way, but...
That bit is. We're doing this because it's the most Cold War of the classic era Doctor Who stories, and this kind of fits in with our little run of Cold War themed things.
So we're just in a room full of sea devils there, all in hibernation. That was quite nicely done. Oh, yeah. Now this bit I think is marvellous. Look at that set there.
I mean, that looks really industrial.
Mm.
Outside. What have you done?
I've set the reactor on overload.
It'll explode.
Oh, I shouldn't think so. They've got a couple of hours to sort out what I've done.
This is madness.
The doctor's right. Will tie up dozens of their people.
I don't really understand why he's just done that, to be honest.
No, let's set a nuclear reactor running at critical with no way out, rather than just going and saying hello and things. Now, this bit here always looks like a dummy falling over the railings, but it isn't.
He's been in the water about 3 seconds.
Yes, he's not drowned. It's there.
It's not the greatest cliffhanger.
No. Watching it again, there's more to appreciate with this than I've ever given it credit for, to be quite honest. I do quite like watching back old Doctor Who, in fact, new Doctor Who's for that matter, and examine them at a technical level, rather than just watching them as a fan, really.
It does give you a different level of insight to know that you're talking about it as a thing rather than just watching it.
So we're off to watch parts 2 and 3. We'll be back shortly with a quick appraisal. Well, that was episodes 2 and 3, and during that time, the Silurians and Sea Devils, who up until this point the base crew are completely blissfully unaware of, attack the base, using the Murker. Now, the Murker is one of those Doctor Who monsters that's always somewhat justifiably had the piss taken out of it in very, very liberal amounts. It's this colossal... It was actually operated by the two men that operated the pantomime horse Dobbin in Rent-A-Ghost. And it's there, this big sea monster. I think one of my favourite bits in is when Solow attacks the Murker, doing those sort of kung fu things, and then just gets twatted by it.
And again, the comedy of that must be a directorial touch, because Ingrid Pitt was a black belt karate. I think it was karate. But she had a martial arts black belt, so she would have known how to do effective and proper-looking kicks as opposed to what we got. Now, okay, part of that will have been trying to avoid the wet paint.
Yes, for the benefit of those at home, the Murker costume, or it is a costume, they hadn't actually seen it, the production team, by the time it came on set. They were still painting it while they were recording. So it burst through this suspiciously bendy bulkhead door, and everybody's face apparently just dropped when they saw it because it was so cobbled together. But it was either that or they don't film, and yeah...
I mean, I have to be honest, I don't actually have a huge problem with the wet paint because, you know, an awful lot of sea creatures are a bit slimy.
And it's not all that noticeable on screen.
Yeah, and you can headcanon that away.
Yeah, but they have a handy ultraviolet converter on the base, which just happens to kill Murkers. So they use that.
That's exactly the same plot device as the end of Terror of the Vervoids.
Oh, yeah, the Vionesium, yeah, that ages them to death in seconds. Yeah, it's no different. I mean, there's a lot of infighting going on the base. It's not a great run of episodes. The story's not terrible, but it's not brilliant. Nilsson and Solow are sort of, they reveal themselves. Maddox is killed because they fry his brain. The Sea Devils come around the corner en masse, and that's the end of episode 3.
That was actually quite a nice and effective cliffhanger, wasn't it?
Mm. And the they've not altered the voice of the Sea Devils very much. There's still that tremorous whisper.
Now, these costumes, I think, look a lot better. The kind of samurai uniform instead of the string vest, I think, works brilliantly. And the original Sea Devils just looked a bit flimsy, and the heads were often very, very wobbly because basically they were a hat.
Yes.
So I'm not wildly worried about the changes in the Silurian costume. I think the changes in the Sea Devil costume are all for the better.
Oh, completely agreed. I think they look quite intimidating, actually. They're a good evolution of the monster. Yeah, the Sea Devils, no problem with at all. Silurians less so. Spaff, what do you think of the story so far?
We need to study it.
Doesn't sound terribly impressed.
Yeah, but he's terribly unimpressed by an awful lot of things.
Yeah, that's true. Shall we watch episode 4, Spaff?
Is the machinery prepared?
Go on, do the honours.
Episode was first shown on 13th of January 1980. Oh, that means that the previous episode was shown on my birthday.
Oh, yeah, there were two a week in those days, weren't there? Yeah.
Which probably means I wouldn't have watched the previous episode.
Goodbye, Doctor. Goodbye.
Now, why would ultraviolet light blind him?
It would burn out your retina.
How do you do? I'm the Doctor.
And it wasn't just ultraviolet, was it? Because it flashed visible light as well.
But I thought it was supposed to be an ultraviolet gun.
It was, but there was also fairly bright white light. It's a ventilation shaft.
We've not seen one of those for a while.
See, look how much better those sea devils. I mean, the flipper feet are a bit unwieldy, but perfectly in keeping with something underwater.
Mm. See, at this point, the Doctor recognises one of the Silurians. Now, it's implied that it's one of the Silurians from the John Pertwee story. But none of them were called Iktar. In fact, I'm not even sure they were named at all.
Now, how much of the problem with the Silurian costumes is that this time around you're seeing them under bright studio light, whereas in the Silurians you saw them in sort of dingy cave light?
Well, I don't think that sort of body armour tunic thing helps, because they didn't have those in the original.
No, but I think it improves it, because it means that you don't see the zip at the back, which you did in the original. No such thing. That sea devil's very sort of jaunty angle, isn't it?
Oh, yeah! He's having a nap. They both are.
The one on the left isn't too bad, but the one on the right, it's very sort of
45 degrees.
Coquettish head on the side. Mm-hmm.
Maybe the whole sea bass has got to lean on. The Doctor's doing it now. I think part of the problem with the Silurians is they look very happy all the time. They look like they're all smiling.
And their eyes do look a little spaced out.
Mm. Why are the quilt
is that
covers
bubble
made
wrap
bubble
on the
wrap?
Bed? You're alive. That's a bit bleeding obvious. And you see the shiny white and grey computer consoles are a real nice contrast to the sort of green organic technology that the Silurians have brought along.
Those missiles will never leave their pads. Not without a sync operator.
The base commander has got some very odd eye makeup.
It's not very evenly applied, is it? Futile gesture is a noble one. Don't know. Where's Turlough not ditched that damn uniform?
Why does the Doctor not ditch Turlough? I mean, he starts off trying to kill the Doctor. Then he's miserable and stroppy all the way through. And then as soon as it gets down to things like this, he refuses to do anything to help and refuses to do anything to rescue the Doctor. He's
there's nothing we can do. Possibly... Absolutely hopeless. No. Got to give Peter Davison his dues. He's playing this with absolute conviction. Of dying? I don't think so. He's got his jacket back. Where was that hiding? Put your foot in. Music's not very flattering. It was a little bit...
And the set was wobbling quite a bit.
It was. A bit ITV sitcom, that bit. They will die. An act of mercy. Since there will be nobody for them to
rejoin. And the Doctor, for once, looking quite dishevelled. His costume seems a little snug.
Never noticed before.
That's why I don't really wear that TARDIS onesie I've got, for wedgie reasons.
Mm. They're not very good guards, are they? They're not keeping much of an eye on him.
Very slow, isn't it?
None of them have noticed him just fuck off out of the door. Oh, could have been disastrous. Stepped out of the ventilation shaft onto another wobbly bit of set. Where is the Doctor? The Sea Devils, unfortunately, do all look like they've got a goiter.
Well, they might have. Although I suspect it's more likely supposed to be gills.
See, in fairness, these corridor sequences aren't quite as overlit as I remember. I remember every lumen bouncing off the walls, and they're not quite as bad as I thought.
Well, it's only really the control room that's very brightly lit, isn't it? Never crossed my mind. Is the computer fully operating? Doesn't explain why. Just fancies a trip. That's kind of an ORAC made by a kids' TV presenter, isn't it?
Yes. And all alien technology interacts with human technology in whatever it is.
Well, I mean, that's actually designed to do exactly that, so...
Well, yeah, but a printer for the 90s wouldn't fit a computer now, and it was... Ah yes, the hexachromite gas, of which there is a liberal amount on the base, just happens to kill reptile life, as established in episode 1. Now that's quite an unpleasant effect, the sea devil dissolving.
Yeah, that's really quite horrible.
To be honest, I don't think they'd get away with that now.
I sometimes wonder why I like the people of this miserable planet so much. The Silurians and sea devils are noble races. They have skills and talents you pathetic humans can only dream about.
That doesn't alter what they're about to do.
He does this angry really nicely.
Mm. It is quite difficult to rationalise the Doctor's stance there. You've got, what, a dozen Silurians and Sea Devils? They are going to nuke the planet. He's been perfectly willing to destroy aliens before.
Has the Fifth Doctor, because he's always been really quite idealistic, hasn't he? With the whole trying to talk the Pteroleptils round in the Visitation, being the one who goes and does the diplomacy thing in the capital in the Five Doctors. What does
it mean? Yeah, I suppose. Earthshock, Mordrin Undead, Terminus. Actually, yeah, in fairness, in every televised story, it's always been diplomacy as the way.
Oh, they've straightened the head of that Sea Devil now.
He's having a crack at it, though, in the background. His head starting to lean to the right a little bit there.
Maybe he's getting a little snoozy.
Oh, like sleepy driving. I'm completely reappraising my view of this story, because the control room set is a little bit bright, but the rest of it isn't.
If you've got your military command center there, you want people to see what they're doing and you want them to be awake, so you want it bright. Whereas you go to other areas of the base and it's more sensible lighting. Oh God, she can't even die well.
Oh, that was all pretty pathetic. Pantomime death. A fair old height difference there between sea devils.
Well, you can get a fair old height difference between people.
Oh, there we go. We've gone to mood lighting.
Some people are normal height. Everybody else is short.
It's working. I can't bargain with Iktar if his guards are dead.
Okay, it's been dramatic and they're running along a bit, but this has been a very slow episode.
Yeah, it has. Considering it's episode 4. Exactly how much welding were they intending to do under the water? Because they've got dozens of huge canisters of hexachromite gas.
Well, maybe they overstocked. Maybe it takes an awful lot of it to make a seal that actually works.
Your warriors are dying everywhere. Abandon the base.
Look, it's hexachromite gas.
Not only has he disarmed them, but he's put his own gun down as well. That's the devil. Not sure what the point of that was.
In many ways, it's a bit of a waste of the sea devils, because they do fuck all in this story.
Turn off the gas.
They do a lot of dying.
The missiles are set to fire. How long have we got?
Less than 3 minutes.
What's your abort procedure?
You see, it's only just now that they're starting to ramp up any kind of drama or tension.
Good luck, Doctor.
See, why is the computer able to link with him? He's not got a hole in his head.
That we know of.
No, his mind is synchronized with the computer.
Tillo apparently having no idea how to use an oxygen mask.
Should we form a tight seal around the mouth? No, just wave it generally.
Or just wave it vaguely in the right general direction. Yeah. Funny that.
Oh, they're all having a bit of a kip now.
I've isolated the ignition circuit.
So if they're supposed to be just variants of the same species, how come the sea devils are keel over at the first sniff of this, whereas with a weensy bit of oxygen, the Silurians are up and moving again?
The charge must be in phase with the pulse of the circuit. If not, it will destroy you.
Well, that sounds like a sensible system. You either get it right or die.
Yes, let nothing distract you. Like the massacre going on around you, or being told you could die if you fuck this up. Because they're not distractions at all, are they?
Oh dear, he's doing very, very unconvincing been shot acting. Oh god, the acting in this is dreadful. That's nice though. Peter Davison's bruising around his eyes.
Are there actually any survivors to this?
No, everyone dies.
No, blokey who's redoing the canisters down in the storeroom survives. The one in the red jumpsuit.
There should have been another way.
Cracking last line though.
Because the only all death classic Who story was the horror of Fang Rock.
Yeah, Caves of Androzani, there's only Timin survives. Everybody else is slaughtered. Even the Doctor. Is that the only one where everyone dies?
Yeah. Are there four where everybody survives? Where there are no on-screen deaths?
Edge of Destruction, Savages.
Fury from the Deep.
So which is the fourth one?
Fourth Doomsday. There's basically nobody alive in it in the first place. And Monarch isn't killed at the end, he's only shrunk down.
I've edited Four to Doomsday out, I'm afraid. It was the very last Peter Davison story I saw, and I wasn't blown away.
It's rubbish. There is no two ways about that.
What do we think of that? I personally, it's the weakest one of that season. I like all the others in season 21. Possibly not Twin Dilemma. But of the Peter Davison ones, that's the weak link for me.
I don't think it's a weak link. I think it's quite a nice story. I think the criticisms about it being overlit, I can see where they come from, but I don't agree with them.
But if you look at all the other Davison stories in that season, that's the weak one, comparatively.
Is that much worse than King's Demons?
I quite like King's Demons.
I quite like King's Demons, but I like Warriors of the Deep as well.
I don't dislike it. I'm just, it's quite low on my hit list of Davison rewatches. Fort to Doomsday is at the bottom of the pile. This isn't much higher up. You see, I've got a real soft spot for the Fifth Doctor era because that was what I watched when I was growing up. So even stuff like Terminus, which is almost universally lambasted by people, I really enjoy that.
I quite like Terminus. Mm. I think it's the weakest of that trilogy.
That's difficult because I like the Black Guardian trilogy in different ways. I wouldn't like to say I love Mordrin Undead. It just catapults me back to my childhood. That was the first Doctor Who story I ever bought on VHS, and it was like being a kid again. Oh, it's too close to call. I can't really pick a weak one. I like them all in different ways. But yeah, nice to see this one again. I've looked at it in quite a different way this time around and picked out a lot of things which I thought the memory cheated. Yeah.
Yeah, and the criticisms people make of Warriors of the Deep are overlit. Well, it's only really that main set that's overlit.
Yeah.
And there is a good reason for it being overlit, and it gives a really nice contrast to the sort of dinginess of the sort of organic feel of the Silurian ship, the Murker, and particularly the Murker's wet paint. Okay, that wasn't the intention, but it's not unreasonable for an underwater creature to be a bit slimy. Lots of underwater things are.
The acting is terrible, to be fair, though.
The acting is pretty terrible. But I was going to carry on and say with the Murker, it's not the worst that there's been, is it?
I've never thought the Murker's that terrible. I mean, yes, it was a little bit overambitious, but we've had worse things. I'm trying to think of one now, but...
Well, you want a water creature, Scarison looks far worse.
There is that, yes. Yeah, with the eyes that move a bit like Pinky and Perky's used to.
The rat in Talons of Wang Chang, the Taran wood beast, the animated bollocks in Aridus in the chase, the monoids. We draw a veil over all of the magma creature in Caves of Androzani.
Yes, they're all dreadful. Terrible. Yes, there are worse examples. But interesting, because I was a little bit young to remember the politics of the time. And after that initial first couple of episodes, the whole Russia versus the West thing, it's quietly dropped until the end. But it is an underrunning theme. It's in there, and it's not very well disguised.
Yeah, and it's the whole reason that we're doing this story. I mean, realistically, it is the most Cold War of any classic Doctor Who.
Yeah, well, it is. Yeah, completely. There were the odd political messages through the Pertwee era. In fact, of all the eras, that's probably the most political, which is why when people go on about modern Doctor Who having political messages in it, yeah, just cast your mind back a little bit further.
Day of the Daleks, perhaps.
There were underlying things. I mean, things like the Green Death with the green messages in that. For the time,
but that's
that was
Cold War.
Cold War-wise,
There's a bit towards the end of the invasion, but that's more we're putting our differences aside.
Yeah, as I've said before, any messages or subtext, they've all been well buried. They've been in there, but they're not front and centre like they bloody well are at the minute. So I think this is probably the most overt reference to what's going on in the real world, even set 100 years in the future.
Yeah.
But it's time to roll the bones. What?
No, it isn't. Who do we need to talk to?
Oh, dear. Out you come, Siri.
I am Persian. Name your price.
The Drag Queen Index. What are we giving this out of 5? How many Olvias does Warriors of the Deep get?
Well, I would say a 2. There is some OTT makeup, but it's terrible. Even Ingrid Pitts looks as though it was applied with the Homer Simpson's makeup gun. Mm.
Bewling does some great sort of arched eyebrow, quizzical Mavic Chen acting in the background.
It's tempting to say Preston does resting bitch face, but she's just not a good actress, and her face spent a lot of time in neutral. There's the sort of camp head to the side of the Sea Devils, but I think that's just the actor's hat not sitting straight. And the costumes... No, nothing particularly exciting on any of that.
I will concur and defer to your judgment. 2 out of 5, Olvias. And I've said let's roll the bones on this, but we've bypassed the randomizer for this one, haven't we?
We have, yes.
Yes, so ignore all of that. This is a little bit of a sidestep for us, just so that we can crowbar in a classic Doctor Who as a Cold War-y theme while this tedious, horrific situation in Ukraine carries on. Until somebody does the decent thing.
He's dangerous. Kill him!
Until next time, thank you for listening, boys and girls. It's been our pleasure, as always. Hope you've enjoyed it too.
Bye now.
The Exton-Moss Experiment featured Simon Exton and Ken Moss. All featured soundtracks are the property of their respective producers, and no infringement of copyright is intended. Title music was performed by the BBC Symphony Orchestra, and the programme was produced by Maverick Productions. For more information, please visit maverickproductionsuk.blogspot.com or find us on social media.